Woodworking for the Blind presents Paul Hardenberger, owner of Ridge Carbide Tool. We're talking saw blades, negative angle, positive angle, cross cut, ripping, table saws, compound miter saws. What are you cutting?
And you can find Woodworkers for the Blind on the web at www4b.org. A lot of blind and visually impaired woodworkers sharing ideas, thoughts, projects, and a lot of how-to-dos. And now our host, Daryl Vickers, will take it away.
We're going to start right at 7 o'clock, Paul. So.
Okay. How many people do you normally have call in?
Well, that's just hard to say, but a lot of people listen to this because we record it. So.
Gotcha.
Sometimes we have a half a dozen, sometimes we have 20. That's just hard to say.
Sure.
But then we go for quality over quantity, too. So.
Yeah. That's good.
And with Paul here, all we need is what we got.
Pretty much, yeah.
Very kind of you.
We have a quality guest tonight. So.
Woke up morning and I thought I was in Minnesota or one of those states because it is very cold. We're in south central Kansas and it was, I think, 1 degree and it snowed all day and it's just blowing really, really cold here.
I'm in Minnesota right now.
Oh.
Yeah, but he's leaving for Florida tomorrow.
Yeah, so tonight I still got to cuddle, you know.
7 p.m. All right, well, you got the recording started, Mr. Jeff?
Yes, sir. We're rolling.
Right, well, Paul, I think we're going to get started since it is 7 o'clock now and... First of all, I'm going to try this. If I mess it up, let me know. But your name is Paul Hardenberger?
That's correct. Yep.
I got. Wow. Good deal. I have to listen to a computer talk. I'm never sure about if it's pronouncing it correctly or not. First of all, I really appreciate you being here, Paul. It's very nice of you to take the time to talk to us. I wanted to find out, as an owner of one of your blades and really like your company, I wanted to find out more about you. And you could tell us about yourself and your company and how you got started and everything.
Sure, sure. No, I appreciate it. Thanks for inviting me, and I'm always happy to talk about saw blades and woodworking. I do talk to groups a fair amount, you know, Woodworkers Guild and whatnot, and I usually pass the hat at the beginning of my talk, and when it reaches a certain level of money, I'll stop, because you guys will get tired of me talking about saw blades. I've owned Ridge Carbide I bought it 4 years ago, and back before that, my main company is called Everlast Saw. And Everlast is a company I bought in 2016, and it's just an old brand. Sell primarily through distributors, people that do sharpening in this country, and probably have 150 dealers around the country. Selling primarily to industrial customers, you know, whether it's making trailers or you name it, anybody who provides tip saw blade that gets it resharpened. And when I bought Everlast, one of my customers was Ridge. And so I ended up, we were making a lot of product for Ridge at that time, Everlast was. So we knew the product line really well, and I got to know the owner. Ridge is based in Lyndhurst, New Jersey, which is Newark, New Jersey area, and just done a great job building the Ridge brand over literally decades. It started in the early 70s. He did a lot of woodworking shows all over kind of the east of the Mississippi from the mid-80s, as far as this is him, his telling me this. And he really built that the brand. And of course, his son became a web developer in early 2006 or 7, something like that, and developed, kind of forced his dad to get a website. And that was pretty fortuitous at that time. And so anyway, it's really great. You know, with Ridge, we actually sell to a lot of individual woodworkers and some small industrial commercial accounts. And we make saw blades in Kansas. South Hutchinson, Kansas is where we're located. We're one of the few companies that still build saw blades in this country. The vast majority of blades that you see in any large retail setting are just going to be an imported blade. So we're really unique from that standpoint. And while we build saw blades, that's our main business. I really believe what we're selling is smooth cuts, because that's what I think most woodworkers want. They want to make a cut on their table saw and not have to join it, plane it, sand it, or...
Right.
Anyway, I'm happy to visit with you about the, you know, like any business, most people, I think most woodworkers, and this is just based on what I've learned over the past few years, is, you know, saw blades are one of those things that everybody has in their shop, but I think they're probably one of the, I don't know, least understood, but probably one of the most critical items in there. And so I spend most of my day literally on the phone with people, helping them, you know, discussing their application and just trying to get the right blade for, you know, whatever they're trying to do, whether they're working on hardwood, softwood, plywood, and ripping, cross cutting, all those things. You know, I hate to see people buy blades and spend money on something and then not get what they want. And unfortunately, a lot of the box store purchases are just blades that are really not designed to give you good quality cut finish. At least this is what we experience. I mean, I get a lot of blades in for sharpening that are mailed into us. And so I get to look at really all my competitors' blades, which is a kind of a unique perspective. But a lot of those blades, while being economic, they do have a higher cost because when you make a cut, you have to do something to that before, you know, you're ready to glue it up or whatever. And this is, I'm generalizing, of course, but I think we give you the best value because good quality blade, you can get it sharpened many times, but it's going to give you a good cut performance over the life of that blade. So I'm happy to, you know, if you have any specific questions, I can certainly be happy to go through and answer any questions that you might
have. I personally have a couple, and then I can open it up to others. I bought my first Ridge Carbide blade last summer. I think it was early last fall. I really like it, but it is the sharpest blade I've ever owned just out of the box, because when I was putting it on the saw and I wasn't using gloves, I had it kind of held my palm on it, and it drew blood from me just by poking me. You know, and I never had a blade. I've changed blades hundreds of times. I've never had a blade do that to me. So that was a unique experience, because that's how sharp that point was. But on the particular blade that I have, like I said, which I really like, it's a combination blade. It has about every 3 or 4 teeth, it has a cut in the, whatever you call the body of the blade. So in the metal itself, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the plate, kind of what we call it.
What is that line actually for?
Great question. So what you're seeing around there are called expansion slots. They've been around a long time. And actually Everlast, my original company, was one of the first, and I think this was in the 70s or 80s. I don't have really good specific data on it, but we were one of the first companies to start pressing in a copper plug in those expansions. And what that's for is two things. As you're cutting, you know, the blade's going to heat up, and so it allows the blade to expand around its perimeter, not potato chip, if you will. The other thing they're for is for sound attenuation. And so the copper plugs that you still, and we still put the copper plugs in blades, is to help reduce, you know, noise and vibration when you're making your cut. Most new blades, they are all basically laser cut. You know, they're cut out of a sheet of steel, and it's, you know, it's a special alloy, and it goes through heat treating process and grinding process and all that. But that's what those expansion slots are for, just literally to help the blade stay straight when it's running.
Well, that's the first blade I've ever owned that had that in there. They may have had some other type of thing, but that's the first one I ever noticed that actually had the cuts in there. So I didn't know if that was something unique to you.
Well, it's an interesting topic. Like anything, you know, you build something, you have to get into the details of it, but there's a lot of blades, and I'm going to pick on the box stores just because for a lot of people buy their saw blades. You know, if you go and look at them, you're going to see the plates have, gosh, a whole variety of laser cut patterns in the body of the plate itself. And of course, most of those are painted blades, right? They're a certain color, which I won't drive, but we don't really do that because, and maybe we're just a little bit old school, but we do check the runout on our plates. The plate is really the foundation of the saw blade. If that thing doesn't run true and stay true, it's going to be difficult for you to get good performance out of that blade. You know, I actually hammer the blades. It's not a blacksmithing, but it's literally hammering with special hammers on an anvil to get the plate trued up. But a lot of the plates that you see in, you know, in a retail setting now really have all the laser. I call it modern art because they're literally all shapes and formats. And I look at that, and we've tried to hammer some of those before to get them to run straighter because customers have complained. And it's really difficult to do because the plate, you know, where it's laser cut is essentially not attached, right? And so it makes it challenging from that standpoint.
What do you mean by not attached?
Well, if you get a chance to look, and you really look up any saw blade, you're going to see them because they are prevalent everywhere. But, you know, they're going to be a pattern cut in the plate to where there's a laser cut line where the laser beam goes through and removes the material. And the reason they're doing that is to try to stop vibration from
transferring
around the plate. Yeah. And so, but when you hammer a blade, I mean, you got to kind of have all the material attached, right? Because you don't hammer in one spot. You'll hammer in an area of a blade to kind of get it screwed back up. And so when you have all these, have the plate body dissected, if you will, while it still looks like a solid body, you can see the laser cut. It's just very challenging to service that blade. And, you know, unfortunately, as a society, we've moved to a lot of, disposable things. In certain industries, you know, a lot of our, you know, folks that are building homes, you know, contractors, especially, you know, when they're putting in foundations and stuff like that. I mean, they're not really worried about a good quality cut, right? They just need to get the job done. And I think there's a real spot for, you know, one and done type saw blades there. But, you know, if you're worried about your cost per cut and getting a good finish long term, that's really where we come in, where our offering comes into place. I mean, I don't offer as Ridge or Everlast what I would call, you know, a consumable or contractor series. Really, all of our blades are designed to be sharpened many times. And that's that value proposition we like to share with people.
Right. I bought a new saw this summer, a saw stop, and I decided, you know, I wanted a good blade to go, because I've been woodworking for about 20 years, but I've had an old contractor saw and this and that. I never could get straight cuts with the thing, even though I check it and everything looks perfectly square, whatever it's, you know, I just never could get a really true cut no matter what I did. And so when I got this saw, and I really liked it, of course, and I went to a really good blade, and now I do get these perfectly straight cuts when I rip, and there's no what I call a rocky chair effect in it, or there's no saw blade marks with your blade or anything. So I'm really impressed with the saw and the blade. I think this kind of goes together for me anyway. But one other question, because this has come up before, I don't understand it. I also have a 12-inch sliding miter saw, and someone would say, I don't know, I may have the terminology wrong, but it's like a negative angle or something like that. And I don't know what that means. I know what it's, supposed to do. I don't know what that means when somebody says that.
Sure, and you're not alone. As I mentioned earlier, you know, the saw blade in a woodworker shop, I mean, it's critical, right? I mean, everybody's got a saw blade, and everyone's probably got sandpaper. I mean, there's some real fundamental tools in there. And a lot of people's knowledge on saw blades, and I'm not being negative here, is that it's round and it has teeth on it, right? And I put it on my saw and I cut things with it.
Right, yeah.
We're really focused on trying to help them, you know, that get the right tool for the job. So there's a couple of things that when I talk to people and before I put them to sleep about saw blades, there's a few things I want you to understand. If you take it away, whether you buy our blade or not, I think it'll get you better performance. And you bring up an excellent point of hook angle. And if you go to our website, actually, you could go to either everlastsaw.com or ridgecarbidetool.com. There are learn sections in both of those websites. And they're pretty straightforward, not too complicated. And you could go through there. There's a saw blade design glossary, essentially, and there's some images that show hook angle. And so if we start with the table saws typically have a positive hook angle. And so what's a hook angle? Well, if you can picture a saw blade, let's just say you walk up to your saw and maybe you're feeding material from the right to the left, and you look at that blade in the saw and you drew a line from the arbor hole straight up through, say, 12 o'clock position, and then you look at one of the teeth, you're going to find those tips are all leaning forward. And so by the fact that they're leaning forward, that's called a positive hook angle. And most of the time, a table saw is going to have somewhere in the neighborhood of a positive 20 to a positive 15. Hook angles are very common. The reason that's important is when you're cutting, whether, you know, it's plywood or hardwood, carbide teeth, when they're sharpened, you know, it's a cutting tool. And of course, there's a variety of top grinds. But what that tip is trying to do is it's rotating through the material is to form a chip. And so you can imagine with that tooth leaning forward, the more positive it is, the more it wants to dig, if you will, dig in or cut into that material and form that chip. And that's kind of the fundamental of cutting. And it's not unique just to wood. You know, if you're cutting aluminum, cutting steel, plastic, whatever your material is, you're trying to form that chip. And of course, the chip is material being removed, also the heat. You know, you try to carry that heat out in that chip as well. So a positive hook angle, very critical for a table saw. Now, you brought up a great point about your sliding compound and the negative hook angle. So as you can imagine, that positive hook, when it's turning, I mean, it wants to essentially grab and climb, if you will, or climb cut into material. Now, on a table saw, the blade is fixed, right? It's not moving. And, you know, the material is passing through the blade. And so the blade can't grab and pull itself into the material. However, on your miter saw or a radial arm saw or a sliding compound, and even a track saw to a certain extent, if you have a blade with a positive hook on there and you start to cut with it, and this is really, this is kind of the stereotypical story about the radial arm saw. If you use a positive hook angle on that, there's a lot of stories about people that using a positive hook angle and they start to cut and that radial arm saw comes out at them and, you know, maybe their fingers in the way or whatever. And that's why we recommend anytime the blade is moving relative to the material, use a negative hook angle. Because it's a big safety issue. And even with your sliding compound, I mean, the ways that those are supposed to work is you pull them out, rotate them down, and then push towards the fence to make the cut. Mm-hmm. And so if you had positive hook angle on there, it might want to climb into the material. So that negative hook angle is really important because a negative hook angle, and again, that if you look at that line from center of the bore to 12 o'clock, that tip's going to be leaning backwards. So it really can't climb into the material. The other benefit you get by using negative hook angle, you're going to get a lot better cut finish. You're going to have less blowout on the bottom and at the back of the cut up against the fence.
So
that's a great question. And that's a real fundamental. And I'll just, again, pick on the box stores. The sad thing is a lot of people buy saw blades for their miter saws or sliding compound that have a positive hook angle. Matter of fact, I'm not even sure any of the big manufacturers offer negative hook angle blades for sale in one of the box stores. And to me, it's just really a disservice to the customer because a lot of people just don't know. And the story I like to share is it was 2 years ago after Christmas, I bought a nice sliding compound miter saw from one of the big manufacturers. And the blade that came on that thing was a 12-inch 24-tooth rip blade. And, you know, as a guy that knows saw blades, it would be hard to pick a worse blade to put on that saw than that one. I don't know why they do that or how that happens. Maybe they had a bunch of them around they wanted to get rid of or something of that blade. But use a negative hook angle on those saws. Very long answer to your question, but a lot of detail there.
Well, no, I actually had that all backwards. I'm glad you explained it to me. And I have one more question, and then I'm going to open it up to other questions. And this one you kind of started out, but is your background, I know you bought the other company, but how is your background in saw blades even get started? Or did you just were looking for a company to purchase or something?
Well, yeah, I grew up on a farm up in north central Kansas, and I have an engineering degree from Kansas State, so... Yeah, I've always been a mechanical person, if you will. I've been a partner in several businesses, manufacturing companies, and kind of divested over time of that. And I actually was looking to buy an old brand. I like selling through distributors, and that's Everlast. I like USA manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found Everlast. And of course, you know, it's an old brand. They had a lot of technical data, a lot of designs, you know, already in place. So I'm not having to reinvent the wheel. You know,
right.
Every day for things. We do lots of custom blades for people, so we're always designing new blades for specific applications, but we have a real good foundation of technical data on what works for certain applications and, of course, what doesn't work. So, yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. It's coming up on 9 years for me, and I learn something every day in business, and that's what I enjoy about it.
Right. Well, thank you very much. That's always, I'm always interested in how either companies get started or, you know, how someone in ends up investing in them, you know. So I really appreciate that information. Does anybody else have a question for Paul about saw blades?
This is Jeff.
Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Thanks so much for being on here, Paul. And it's really interesting to hear your story. I do a lot of cedar, pine, that type of stuff right now. That's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what blades would you suggest for ripping and for my Powermatic table saw?
Mm-hmm.
Then I have a Hitachi compound miter slide saw.
Very common questions, and thank you for that question. So I guess kind of starting from the beginning on saw blade selection, one of the things I always ask, and it's a little bit of our tagline, is what are you cutting? And the reason that started that way is because if we would go on vacation with friends and I would get a phone call, I would always ask, well, what are you cutting? So one of our good friends kind of was giving me a hard time about that. And so that kind of evolved into the tagline we use for Ridge Carbide now. What are you cutting? It's really an important question. You're cutting mainly softwood. The next mm-hmm. question I always ask is how thick is it? How thick are you cutting typically?
4/4.
Okay. Those two are really important questions. And if you get an opportunity, go to our website. In the Learn section, there's a saw blade selection guide. And I often direct people to go look at that while I'm on the phone with them because the number one problem I find when somebody calls in and they go, Paul, I'm cutting, you know, let's just say 8/4 material and it's just burning terribly. my table saw. And I always say, well, what are you, you know, what blade are you using? And they'll say, well, it's an 80 tooth blade. And so I'm like, well, okay, hold on. Way too many teeth. But they'll a lot of times respond to me that, well, gosh, Paul, I thought that for a better cut at the best cut finish, I need a lot of teeth. And I will just say, from my experience, that really doesn't hold water. So if you go to the Saw Blade Selection Guide, you're going to see what we call the two-tooth rule. And it's really simple, but if you can go there and you can see the photos that show what I'm talking about, it makes a lot more sense to you. But at a high level, we like to have you keep two teeth in the material cutting at any given time. You can go up to three and be okay. But the challenge is the more teeth you have cutting material at any given time, the more heat you're generating. And so the more heat, you know, the more problems you have, especially a lot of in those softer woods, you know, a lot of times they heat up, you know, you get a lot of the resin coming out of them pretty quick, and that gets on your blade and it kind of spirals downward from there. So if you're cutting four quarter and you would go to that saw blade selection guide, you would see that a 10 inch 40 tooth blade, positive hook angle table saw blade provides you with three teeth in the material, and three quarter inch material, you'd have two teeth. And that's why that 10 inch 40 tooth saw blade works so well as a good general purpose blade. Because so many people work in three quarter and four quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for your miter saw, you said it's 8 1/4
diameter. I believe so.
So once again, you know, the two tooth rule applies to whether you're ripping or cross cutting. A lot of those miter saw blades, you don't have a ton of variety. You know, you might be able to get a 40 tooth blade or something like that. For sure, as we just talked about, you want to get a negative hook, but I would say somewhere in that 40 to 30 tooth range would be a good general purpose blade for you on that saw. If you're going to be cutting thinner sections or profiles, something like that, more teeth would be required.
Yeah, I went to your page here for the selection. It's accessible too, and I'm going down it. So thank you.
Okay. Well, you're welcome. Again, we'd love you to buy our blades, but even if you don't, if you'll use that methodology, you'll get better performance. I hate to hear people buying blades and they get them, and this whole notion of, boy, I just need more teeth. I actually did a show up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota last weekend with one of our dealers, and I bet 25% of the people that came up and we were doing demonstrations and whatnot, they say, well, you need more teeth on there to get a good cut. And you really don't. What affects the cut finish is the side grind on the tip and then the top grind to a lesser extent. And that's kind of a whole nother topic I don't want to bore you with. But very long answer to your question. I can be kind of long-winded, but thank you, Jeff, for your question.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. This spring, I'm going to be opening up brand new kind of stuff. And I just was thinking it's time to upgrade my saw blades because, you know, you rotate them out. They've been around for a while and stuff. And instead of sharpening them and stuff, I thought I'd do something new because I like to copy Darrow and he's has such good stuff with that blade that I was going to give it a try. No, I seriously was. I heard you talking about it. It cuts you and, you know.
Masochist.
It's nice to try something, and I'd like to try a set of them for my different saws, and then when I go to hardwood, have another set, and then by the end of that summer, fall area, I'll know if I like them or not.
So, Paul, why is it if you have more teeth that you generate more heat?
Well, yeah, it's just, again, as that blade is rotating through the material, again, it gets into this whole cutting tool theory, right, where there's a chip load, and you calculate chip load by the RPM of the blade, and then you calculate the perimeter of the blade, and that turns into a surface footage per minute in terms of revolutions per minute.
Okay, we're good. Just kidding.
Yeah, sometimes when I do talks, we do get into a little math and people kind of glaze over. So I try to steer away from that. But what you're doing is, I mean, this science of cutting is very well known, and materials all have physical mechanical properties that they like to be cut at. In other words, you'll get the best performance. And so if you take a 10 inch 40 tooth blade, which is very common, and you go to cut 3/4 or 4/4, let's just say you're just ripping it. So it sounds good. It feels good. You know, you're getting a nice clean cut. Well, and you're feeding it at maybe 10 feet per minute or something like that, right? If you would say, well, let's try to cut some 8/4 then. Well, you're going to have to feed that a lot slower, and you're going to have to raise the blade higher, obviously, to get through that. So that exposes a lot more teeth to the thickness of the material. Well, they're all cutting while you're feeding.
Oh.
And if you like, oh, gosh, I'm going to take this a little bit slower just because, you know, it's heavier. And you're going to have to. There's no way you could beat it same rate you did as the four quarter. But what happens is you take it slower and you're taking a smaller chip load, but they're all cutting and they're all generating heat. Versus if you would go to a, say, a 24 tooth blade on that eighth quarter, there's just fewer teeth in there, or a 22. And it makes a big difference, because what happens is when you're cutting and that heat generating, again, the resins in the wood start to kind of liquefy and they get stuck to that blade. And it really, and of course, it doesn't cut as well then. It doesn't cut as well, so you generate more heat. It's a real slippery slope.
Okay.
One of the things I always tell people is, you know, a real common question was, how many sharpenings do I get? How do I know when it's going? All great questions. But the number one thing that you can do for your saw blade, whether it's ours or anyone else's, is clean it from time to time. Get that residue off there. And we have people ship blades into us for sharpening. And we sharpen everybody's blades, our blades, and all manufacturers. And so many of them come in that are just loaded up with resin. And it's just difficult to get a good cut when there's that much on there. And so if they would clean them, they probably would get some more cut life out of them. I'll just share with you, a lot of people ask, well, how do you clean them? What do you recommend?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard all kinds of strategies for this. But I had one guy that he uses oven cleaner on them, which I was like, wow, you don't need to get anything like that to get your saw blade clean. What we use, very easy, is we'll use just a simple degreasing agent, like a couple of brand names. You probably heard of Simple Green or Mean Green, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Use it.
Yeah, there you go. So, and a great way to do that, I don't know, I'm going to mention, you know, one of our promoters is, I don't know if you guys know, James Hamilton, Stumpy Nubs on YouTube, but
right.
Been around a long time and just a ton of great technical information. But he's got a nice video that shows how to clean a blade with a 5-gallon bucket lid. You turn it over and just kind of fill that up and let it soak. And that's what we do. When we get blades in and they're so soaked, we let them soak for a day in that Mean Green. And then we can take a pretty soft bristled, stiff bristle brush and it comes right off.
Well, that's great information. Yeah.
I think Bob had a question.
Yep. Paul, thank you for joining us today. I actually have two questions. The first one was about that positive and negative angle. I didn't quite follow that. So if I'm in front of my table saw and I'm pushing the board, you know, through the blade, are they leaning a positive hook angle? Is it leaning to my right or leaning to my left?
Well, if you're feeding material into your table saw, if you would take a big step or to the left, and look at that blade like you were going to be putting it on the machine or taking it off, and you're seeing it rotating.
Yes.
Those teeth are going to be leaning
away
to the right. They're going to be leaning. They're going to be leaning into the person feeding it in, into
okay.
the operator.
Okay.
So it's not a right or left thing. It's actually
forward
straight
or backwards
at you if you're
forward.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And get a chance, Bob. Go to ridgecarbidetool.com in the Learn section. There's a saw blade design glossary there. And there's a couple real simple drawings that I think will help you see that better.
Bob, it's like porpoises coming at you.
There you go.
Okay. And my second question is blade height. Now, I've always heard that you just need to have like the bottom of the gullet clear the top of your board. Is that correct? Or what do you recommend for the correct blade height going through the material?
Yeah, boy, thank you for that. That's a really great question. And that is something I should have mentioned when we were talking about the two-tooth rule, but that is really critical. Yes, we recommend that you raise the project the saw blade to where that bottom of that gullet, which is the round portion of the tooth form in the saw plate itself, you raise that up to where it's essentially flush with the top of the material you're cutting. I've had a lot of people ask that question, and there's a good number of people that say, well, I just want it from a safety standpoint. I only want to project it maybe just a little bit of the tip until I make the cut. And the problem with that is that those teeth are still rubbing on the sides of the material, creating heat during the cutting process. I do have people today that buy our blades, and they'll call and say, Paul, I got a brand new blade and it's just burning like crazy. I'm like, wow, that sounds terrible. Tell me about it. And virtually everybody that has that problem has the blade too low. Now, some people will say, well, Paul, that's kind of dangerous having that projected so high. And I mean, it can be, you know, run a guard over the top of that or something to protect you, because it is important. The tool has a certain cutting geometry that is going to work best for that, and having that too low just puts more teeth in the material, which is not good. Great questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Dennis, and I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I have the Ridge Carbide blade, 40 tooth, full kerf, and I cut 4/4 hardwood all the time. And I've considered buying a 24 tooth rip blade. Would I get any better of a cut in the rips with the 24 tooth rip blade as I'm getting with the 40 tooth combo blade?
First, thank you for your business. We appreciate it. It's always nice to visit with customers. I would say probably not, because again, back to that two tooth rule, in 3/4 and 4/4 material, you're either going to get two teeth in the material or three teeth. And if you jumped up, if you went from 40 to 24 teeth in 4/4, you're probably going to only have one tooth in that material anytime. And that works, but you tend to sacrifice some of your cut finish quality there. And you guys are asking such good questions because, you know, we had the 1040, a 10-inch 42 super combo for many years and still do today. It's my number one selling blade. But over the last few years, we've developed, I call them lower tooth count blades. So we offer that super combo design in a 30 tooth blade. We offer it in a 24 tooth blade and then also in a 20 tooth blade. And the reason we do that and develop those is because we had so many customers saying, you know, they want to miter cut or cross cut on their table saw these thicker materials, whether it be 6/4, 8/4, 10/4, something like that. Because a lot of times what happens, people will rip on their table saw, but then they need to cross cut it. Let's just say you do rip some 8/4, and then you take it over to your sliding compound miter. And I'll ask you, I don't know if you've ever done that, but if you're cutting, you know, a piece of 8/4 on, let's just say you've got a 12-inch 80 tooth blade on that miter saw, I mean, do you take that cut all at once, or do you kind of make several passes through that material to make the cut? And anybody can answer, I guess. So I'm asking a rhetorical question here.
Well, I tend to do it all at once, pull it out and push it back in. I don't know that I can, though, when it's a really thick piece. I might have to actually go at it slower.
Well, you might go a lot slower if you're trying to make the whole cut, or you might make several cuts at increasing depth, right?
Right.
And when you do that, I mean, you kind of know, you're kind of practicing the two-tooth rule there. It's just never really been formalized to you like that. And the reason you're doing that is so you don't load up all those teeth in that material. You're taking smaller cuts, and you're not jamming those gullets full of material with every pass.
I was going to suggest the other thing that I had heard and that kind of goes in that same direction is if you're cross cutting on a miter saw, a board that's got some tension in it, If you try and take a full cut, you risk binding the blade. And if you can take a slice and then drop it down and take another slice, you relieve that tension as you do the cut and you won't bind the blade up.
No, that's an excellent point. So back to Dennis's, I'll try to finish up with this. So, you know, if you're, we make a 10-inch 32 super combo, and we also make these in rip saw blades too. I mean, if you only need to rip for whatever reason, then get a rip saw. Sadly, a lot of people also think, well, I'm going to get a rip saw, it's this 24 tooth, and it really isn't. I mean, a 24 tooth is a very common, 10-inch 24 tooth is a very common rip saw. But again, if you're going to get a blade to do ripping, I'm going to ask you, what thickness are you cutting? Because if you say, oh, I got a bunch of 4/4 I need to rip, I'm going to say, don't get a 24 tooth. Honestly, our 10-inch 42, what we call a flat top blade, we also call it a box joint blade, is a great ripping blade for 3/4 and 4/4 material. If you said, well, I got a bunch of 6/4 to rip, then I would say we'll get our 10-inch 32 super rip blade. Again, these rip blades, the difference between them and a super combo is the rip blade, all the teeth are flat on them. They are not meant to do any cross cutting. They are meant to cut with the grain. And so therefore, if you've got a 40 tooth super rip or box joint blade, you've got 40 teeth that are cutting there all the time. But a combo blade is designed to rip and cross cut. And the tooth geometry, the what we call the OD or outside diameter grind on that blade is different than the super rip blades. They're meant, they have beveled teeth on them. And that top bevel angle is designed to help sever those wood fibers when you're making a cross cut. Whereas a flat top blade, it just kind of blasts through them. It just shears them. And that's why you get a lot of blowout on the bottom and you dull that blade pretty quickly if you start cross cutting with it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Great question. Yeah, thank you.
Hey, Daryl, I got a question.
Yes,
this is Jim Nordquist. In the past, of course, I have cross-cut plywood, hardwood plywood. You always get a chip out underneath. Mm-hmm. And then so we used to, like, we would lower the blade really low, and then we'd go backwards, which, of course, is dangerous, you know, because it could jump on you. Is there another way to approach that?
So it was like 3/4 veneered plywood?
Yeah, like oak, you know, I mean, or whatever, plywood. But the veneer is so thin that it does chip.
Well, yeah, so great topic, because plywood can be a real challenge to cut and get a nice clean cut. And of course, we really found, and when I say we, I'm talking about my customers that I talk to regularly that cut plywood. It has really changed. It changed a lot during COVID. You know, I had guys cutting with, we have a 10-inch 48 tooth. We call it the Ultra Combo Blade, and it is really a blade for cutting plywood. Got a positive hook angle, and the top angle is 25 degrees. I mean, it doesn't have a raker in it, but it's really meant for plywood. And we had guys using that for years with great results. And then they would call me and say, gosh, I just got damn cutting plywood. It looks like I used a chainsaw on it, you know? And I'm like, well, what changed? And well, it turns out that the quality, the chemistry, the glue, the veneer got thinner. I mean, all these things. And I have more with Baltic birch than I think any other species. But you know, to answer your question, plywood can be a challenge. And you kind of have two approaches that I recommend. The first one is, like I said, we do have 10-inch 48 tooth ultra combo that does a nice job on 3/4 plywood. It is not a blade, though, that I'm going to recommend for any really hardwood cutting or anything like that. It is really meant for plywood and usually does a nice job ripping and cross cutting with the grain. But the second approach is if you have something you're working on and you say, I just cannot have any chipping on it. This is where we can sometimes get into a little difference of opinion and some controversy. I certainly don't want to do that this evening, but we have a series of blades called Mellicrafter blades. One of the more popular ones is a 10-inch 80-tooth Mellicrafter, and it actually has a negative hook angle on it, and it has what we call a high ATB. So the top angle on that is a 30 degree. So as I mentioned earlier, you know, when our combo blades have on the outside diameter grind, they have a bevel, very common, and that's designed to help sever those wood fibers. Well, if you can imagine, if you have a slight angle there, it doesn't cut quite as easily as a tall angle. So most top angles on blades might be 10 or 15 degrees. Our Mellicrafter blades have a 30 degree top angle, which means they do a really nice job of shearing those fibers. And that coupled with the negative hook angle is going to give you your best results. Now, some people say, well, Paul, you just said that you want to use that negative hook angle on miter saw blades, right? Or on miter saws or radial arm saws. And that is true. But you can certainly use that blade on a table saw for cross-cutting neared plywood. It will not be a problem. You can hear sometimes people say, well, it'll kick back at you. And you know, I've just never seen any any evidence of that.
Well, thank you very much. I didn't know about that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Great question.
You had talked a little bit about sharpening earlier, and one of the times that I've had to have my blades sharpened recently was when my saw stop tripped and set the brake off. I had to send it back in. When you guys see blades come in after that kind of event, do the blade bodies typically need to be straightened? Or is it fine to just say, you know, replace the damaged teeth and sharpen the blade?
Yeah, it really depends. I'm going to say if you're running a blade that is a thinner plate, I'm going to say the vast majority of those are getting bent. And then it gets down to, well, do you want to try to spend the money, straighten them? We can. And we talked about hammering a little bit earlier, and this is kind of where that modern art I mentioned comes into play, because if that blade is bent and we're trying to straighten it, hammer it, it can be real challenging. And of course, we charge by the hour for that. And so a lot of times on a thin blade, if it comes in, we just tell people, hey, it is really, and it's bent, it's not worth us spending the time on it. You know, especially if it's, you know, I'm going to, again, go to the box store. Blade probably not worth it. If you're using a blade that's got a heavier plate, you know, like our blades are full, we call them a full curve, they cut 1/8 inch, those plates are thicker, those tend to weather the storm a lot better, and it may be that you just cracked a couple of teeth and not much straightening required. We do get a lot of blades in that have had saw stop. I think the other day we got a box of them, and I think there may have been five blades with five cartridges stuck to them. And I called the guy, customer, and I said, "Hey, what happened?" And he said, "That took me about 10 years to put those together. I figured he had just had a bad weekend in the garage or something." But it was really, you know, open that, and they're all stuck to it, and we have to remove them and inspect them after that. There is, again, I'll refer you back to our website in the Learn section. There, we do have a blog, actually on the blog section, where if you do have an engagement, you can kind of inspect the blade yourself. A lot of times, the blades come out of that just fine. I always tell people, if you have the engagement, check it out very carefully. And if you don't see any broken teeth, and again, you can, you know, cut you a 2x2, 15 inches long, and carefully just tap those teeth. You're not going to hurt anything. But check them to see if there's any loose teeth. If there's not, and you don't see that it's bent, put it in the saw, turn it on, listen to it. Does it sound fine? If it does, get a piece of scrap and cut you a little piece, right? See how it cuts. A lot of times, you don't have to do anything to it.
Wow, okay. Thank you.
I could actually attest to that, because the saw stop blade that came with it is the one I tripped it with. And I did all that stuff, and it's just fine. It's perfectly healthy. Hey, Paul, I wanted to tell everybody, since we're at 8 o'clock, and I told Paul an hour, so we could cut this off, or anybody is welcome to stay, including you, Paul, if you want to. But I wanted to tell everybody that, you know, I don't want to keep Paul any longer than an hour.
I'm certainly, if there's a question, like I said, I'd love to talk about products and love to help, because there's some real basic things that we've talked about tonight that if you'll do them, it'll, I think, give you a better results, you know, in your projects.
There was a lot of great information out here, Paul, and I never even asked this question, but you kind of answered it in a myriad of different ways, is why there are so many varieties of saw blades, you know, and your website, it is a good resource for trying to figure some of that out, as long as pictures aren't involved, because none of us can really see them, but there's a lot of good descriptions out there. It's kind of how I ended up with my blade.
Where can people find your saw blades, and do you buy them off the web, or do you send them to a store?
You know, really, either or. Of course, we have a very active website, and it's, I think, fairly easy to use. We're going to be getting a nice upgrade to that here in about a month. I'm sure you're probably familiar with Woodcraft Supply. I think they've got about 70 stores around the country now. Most of the stores are carrying our product. And there are some other retailers, you know, in certain areas that carry them. Like if you're in Northwest Indiana, Von Tobel carries our blades. If you're in Los Angeles, Eagle Tools carries them. And you can go to the website, there's a where to buy. There's also some online retailers you can buy from us, whatever's easiest for you.
Paul, maybe you could ask your website folks to put alt text or descriptions to the images that you have on your website. That would help us a lot.
No, I understand. Thank you. I'm making a note of that.
I have a question about your saw blades. I need to get a dado set for my table saw, and was curious if you have a blade that is saw stop specific on the dado, because I'd seen some stuff. I wasn't sure how much credence to give it, that dado stacks that have nubs on them that stick out in between the teeth can impact the ability of the blade stop mechanism from working.
It's an excellent point you bring up. We do make dado sets, and they are, we I don't know, work closely with SawStop. We talk to them pretty regularly, but they like our set. We have one that's an 8-inch 24 tooth, has a negative hook angle, which means it is really good for use, you know, in that veneered plywood that we were talking about, or hardwoods. What you're mentioning, those nubs, those are really called anti-kickback. And that was something developed, you know, quite a while ago to try to stop kickbacks with table saws. And it's pretty effective in that regard. The problem is with saw stop, those are really kind of preventing, you know, the cartridge from engaging in the teeth. And so, yeah, saw stop does not want you to use blade of any kind with that anti-kickback on it. And ours don't.
And okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very popular. And ours have the chippers on our blades are really kind of a, I'm going to call them a propeller style versus a full solid plate. And so they weigh less. And that's an important part for saw stop as well, because what they're worried about is if you have an engagement, let's just say you have it set up for cutting a three-quarter slot where you have all the chippers on there or most of them. I mean, you've got a fairly large rotating mass out there. And if the cartridge engages, they're worried about it bending the spindle because of the sudden stop and the weight. I've never heard of that happening, but I guess it does.
Yeah, I listened to a YouTube video the other day where a guy talked about that happening to him, and he actually did bend the arbor on his saw stop.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, like I said, I've never heard of it. I'm sure it happens or they wouldn't be worried about it. I know there's some sets out there that are quite heavy. I think ours is like, I don't know, 5.6 pounds all in. But I know there's some others that are, you know, in that 8-pound range. And I can see that being an issue if it happens.
Thank you.
Sure.
This has been great.
Well, Paul, thank you very much for being on the call. So I really do appreciate it. I mean, this has been great information that can help a lot of people. Like I said, this is recorded, and a lot more people will hear it than actually may have been on the call tonight. And hopefully they'll check out your blades, because I really well, love, like mine, the one I've got. So
I'm really glad to hear that.
We'll be getting more.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that, and I really appreciate your business. Yeah, and the opportunity to come on. Great questions, and feel free. You know, we are also a little old-fashioned. We do answer the phone. So if you ever have questions and you just want to call in, we got a few folks in the office that can help you. Or I'm a lot of times around and answer the phone myself. So anyway, really appreciate your time and great questions tonight.
Thank you.
Well, I can attest to you answering your phone, too, because you did. So thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks. Be sure to check out www4b.org, Woodworkers for the Blind. Become part of the community and learn from others. Hope you enjoyed. And until next time, bye-bye.